The Minnesota Court of Appeals is now in session. Judge Smith, Judge Connolly, Judge Bradfold, the Honorable Tracy M. Smith presiding.
Good morning. Thank you. Welcome to the Minnesota Court of Appeals. We're holding this argument today via Zoom. Case before us today is March 27, 2024, and the case before us is A23-1368, State of Minnesota Respondent versus Nicholas David Butts. Can I get help with that pronunciation, please?
Buttsy.
Buttsy. Okay, thank you, Buttsy. Counsel, each of you has 15 minutes for your principal argument. Counsel for appellant, you'll have 5 minutes for rebuttal if you choose to use it. When you're not speaking, if you could keep yourself muted, we'll all do the same too. Other than that, I'm sure you've done this before, perhaps had Zoom meetings before. I don't think I need to say anything else about it. So we're ready to go, counsel for appellant, when you are. And let's all, Judge Connolly and I will mute too. Okay.
Thank you. Good morning, and may it please the court. My name is Adam Justinger, and I represent the appellant in this matter, Mr. Nicholas Buttsy. There are several issues that we've raised before the court today. The first is whether or not the district court erred in admitting Exhibit 2 because it violated Mr. Buttsy's constitutional right to confront witnesses against him. Number two, whether the district court erred in admitting Exhibit 2 because it's hearsay not subject to an exception. Issue three is whether the district court erred in admitting Exhibit 2 because the state failed to lay proper foundation for the document. And issue four is whether or not the district court erred in admitting Exhibits 1 and Exhibits 3 because they lack the proper certification, which ultimately would cause them to lack foundation. The facts in this case are relatively straightforward, but the dates are very important. In July of 2022, Mr. Buttsy was issued his driver's license. The correct address that he resides at was listed on that driver's license. Ultimately, Minnesota Department of Public Safety claims that they mailed a notice of suspension to Mr. Buttsy on November 21st, 2022. Mr. Buttsy never received this notice. On February 12th of 2023, he was stopped by Deputy Aho. Ultimately, he was cited for driving after suspension. That citation was later filed with the court on February 13th of 2023. March 2nd, Mr. Buttsy paid his reinstatement fee and got his license reinstated. March 7th, he was notified of this reinstatement. On March 8th, he retained my office to represent him. We filed various documents with the district court, including one requesting a hearing on the matter. On March 9th, the court issued dates for a pretrial hearing as well as a jury trial. And ultimately, on March 22nd, the Department of Public Safety issued a document then titled Certificate of Order Sent, which is Exhibit 2 in this matter. On August 8th of 2023, we finally received the Exhibits 1 through 3 from the state. And the jury trial was held on August 17th of 2023.
So counsel, during the... Oh, excuse me. I think we've probably gotten to where we need to be in terms of addressing now. Thank you for that summary, the evidentiary issues and confrontation clause issue here. I want to just make sure I understand the exhibits at issue and your arguments about them. Exhibit one is the first page only of the notice of suspension of your driving privileges, right? Sort of ends
yes.
Mid-sentence. So I don't know what's on the next page, but that's all. The first page of that is exhibit one, and it says, relevant to, I think, the issue that we're getting at, date issued November 21, 2022, okay? Exhibit two, and correct me if I'm wrong, is their certificate of order sent that states, and it's from the Commissioner of Public Safety, that states the attached is a true and correct copy of an order in the records of the public safety, blah, blah, blah. The original of the attached order was deposited in first class mail. The attached order that they're talking about in that certificate is Exhibit 1. Is that not correct?
Yes, Your Honor. We believe
okay. So Exhibit 1 is the order of suspension. Exhibit 2 is a certificate of order sent. And I understand we're going to get to your argument, I think, probably really about paragraph 2 in that certificate. Exhibit 3 is a excerpt from the driving record of your client that has, at the end, a certification of authenticity, right?
Yes, Your Honor.
Okay. I just to set the stage, I don't understand why It doesn't appear to me that Exhibit 2 has anything to do with Exhibit 3. I know that they might have come together in a package, but Exhibit 2 just says it certifies Exhibit 1. It doesn't speak to Exhibit 3. Exhibit 3 seems to be independently certified. Am I wrong about that?
Your Honor, I think I'm not necessarily saying that the court is wrong on that. I do see the certification that would be on Exhibit 3. But I still think that the problem would be if we look at the section that Mr. Butsey was cited with under 171.24, it does require proper notice that it was mailed by first class mail. So okay, I don't think.
So if we're dealing with just Exhibit 3, let's pretend that's the only thing that the state put in, Exhibit 3. Is your argument that it just there's insufficient evidence to establish the necessary notice? So that would undermine the conviction. Do you have an evidentiary or confrontation clause problem with Exhibit 3?
Your Honor, I think at that point there would be, just because in order, again, for the state to prove a violation of driving after suspension, they would have to prove that proper notice was sent. And if we look at subdivision 7 of 171.24, it talks about how proper notice is given. One of those ways is by personal service, which I don't think the state's arguing that it was ever personally served on Mr. Butsey. But the other way is by mail, and not just by any kind of mail, but by first class mail.
Okay. So do you have a hearsay problem with Exhibit 3? It's a certified, the certification goes to authenticity. The underlying document is a portion of the driving record. Is there a hearsay objection problem?
Your
to
Honor,
that?
I think there could be a hearsay objection, you know, and I think it gets to whether or not these are considered business records or if they're public records, and whether or not that exception would apply to hearsay, which is kind of what we've raised.
Assuming for a moment, and again, because I want to get to the other part of it, I'm just trying to split these up because they seem different to me. Assuming that, for purposes of argument, that we were to conclude that an excerpt from a driving record is a public record and an exception to the hearsay rule, and then that it is certified pursuant to 902 as to authenticity, is there a confrontation clause problem under our
just
case law?
Just as it pertains to Exhibit 3?
Correct.
I think that raises an interesting issue. Like I said, if Exhibit 3 is considered hearsay, it would be up to the state to prove that the exception applies, which we don't believe that they did. At the lower court, I'll get into this in my argument, the only thing that they raised was that these three exhibits were business record exceptions. They didn't raise anything about a public record until appeal, ultimately, in their brief that they filed in this case. So I do think that if Exhibit 3 was the only document that the state admitted in, it still would be testimonial because it's being used to specifically prove an essential element of a violation of 171.24.
I guess I have a hard time seeing how an excerpt of a record is testimonial, but we can leave that aside. So I think we can leave aside Exhibit 3, which I think has its own, it seems unrelated to Exhibit 2 and 1 to me on the face of it. I can hear from, unless you think otherwise, it doesn't seem like Exhibit 2 references the driving record at all. But let's go to Exhibit 2 then. And your argument there to distinguish this, nor dealt with, of course, a certificate of order sent, similar. What's the difference between this and what happened in Knorr?
Your Honor, I think there's several differences between our case and Knorr. Obviously, there's fairly limited case law out here regarding this specific issue. My research has pointed to Knorr and Vondahar. ultimately, looking at Knorr, the more recent case, I think that we're raising different arguments than what were raised in Knorr. And then I think the second important factor to outline for this court is that in Knorr, there was no objection to the exhibits coming in. So ultimately, the Knorr court dealt with a different standard of review. In that case, the Court of Appeals, this court was looking at whether or not there was plain error committed by the district court. We did object to these documents. I think both parties agree that this is a de novo standard of review now because it's a constitutional issue. But I think some of the major differences between our case and Knorr is one, this court in Knorr recognized that, I'm trying to find the exact quotation, but in Knorr, this court said that the underlying record itself states that the mailing date was February 9th of 2016. So I think if we look at Exhibit 1, which is the notice in this case, I'm assuming that is the document that the Nord Court was talking about, we don't have a date mailed. We have a date issued. And our position would be that a date mailed is different from a date issued. You know, for example, I signed a document on Friday that I was expecting or hoping that my staff was going to get mailed and filed with the court. We've had some pretty nasty weather here in North Dakota. That didn't ultimately happen until Tuesday. You know, but the document itself still says that I signed it on Friday. So I use that as an example. But again, I think date issued is different from date of mailing. I think to cure that issue would be very simple for the Department of Public Safety within Exhibit 1 or the notice to put down when it was actually mailed. But in this case, it seems that they're trying to slide it in Exhibit 2 and just classify it as a certification.
Mr. Justinger, I understand your argument. Date issued in the dictionary is defined as distributed. So why is distributed different from mailed?
Your Honor, and I guess my response to that would be is distributed how? There's nothing in Exhibit 1 that states how it was distributed. Was it distributed by mail? Was it distributed by someone who put it on somebody's desk to be mailed out? Was it distributed to a tray, again, for somebody to mail at a later date? We don't know what that issuance date means. But I think more importantly, if we look at the language of 171.24 subdivision 7, like I said, it talks about how proper notice is given. And one way that proper notice is given is by first class mail. So Exhibit 1, there's nowhere within Exhibit 1 that says that this was properly sent out by first class mail. Even if this court
isn't, as I read the statute, what's required that the state needs to prove is that the person has been given notice of or reasonably should know of the cancellation or denial. And then the subdivision 7 says that notice is sufficient, and it gives some, if, you know, it's personally served or if it's mailed by first class mail. It's also sufficient if the person was informed that it would be imposed, blah, blah, blah. Are those the only, by saying something is sufficient, is that the only way? Or could an issued also be a fact finder decide that if a notice was issued, that in fact, that is also the person has been given notice or reasonably should know? In other words, it doesn't have to satisfy that subdivision. No subdivisions are sufficient but not necessary ways of satisfying notice.
Your Honor, and I guess I would disagree. If we look at the statute that he's charged with, it says that there has to be notice that's provided. And then that specific subdivision says how notice can be given. So if we're looking at this case in particular, there was testimony that he was not personally served with this notice. There was testimony that he was not informed by Deputy Aho, and there was no other testimony that he was informed by somebody else. So the state is solely relying upon the fact that this was served by first class mail. And I don't think that we can discount the language that the legislature used, specifically that it be sent by first class mail. If we just look at Exhibit 1, was this sent by first class, second class, third class, fourth class mail? We don't know what it was sent by. The only thing that's establishing that this was properly sent by first class mail is the certificate of order that specifically indicates first class mail. So I think that's a distinguishing.
Does the record indicate why your client's license was suspended?
Your Honor, I don't believe it would in Exhibit 1. Exhibit 1 indicates the reason for the withdrawal for being a habitual violator.
Of what?
It does not. Yeah, and I believe that would be...
So we don't know whether this was canceled inimical to public safety or just not paying parking tickets. Is that a fair statement?
Your Honor, I think given the fact that he was cited with driving after suspension, I think that would maybe indicate that this is that he was not canceled. But yes, I don't think we know what ultimately led to this. Was it parking tickets, speeding tickets? I don't think the record shows any of that.
Does the record indicate how old your client is?
Again, Your Honor, yes, it would be on Exhibit 1. It lists his date of birth.
So how old is he?
Born July 9th of 1989.
Thank you.
You're welcome. getting back to our issue with the confrontation clause, I would also point out how this case is different from the Knorr case. In Knorr, they talk about if there's additional information contained within the document, this court may reach a different result. Again, I don't think I need to rehash that, but our argument is that there is additional information within the certificate.
Thank you. Counsel, would you agree that if Exhibit 1 stated, instead of saying date issued, November 21, it said date mailed by first class mail, November 21, that under Knorr, Exhibit 2 and Exhibit 1 would be admissible?
I would not disagree with that, Your Honor. I think that change would be sufficient, because then at that point, yes, the underlying record that was mailed, it's proving that. But that additional information within the certificate is the concern. Now, I think if we look at Knorr, this court cited the cases like Commonwealth v. Parenteau, a Massachusetts Supreme Court case, as well as State v. Kennedy, an Iowa Supreme Court case, both which held that certificates of mailing are in fact testimonial. So I know that this court has looked at that. That could be an issue for later on down the road, but I don't think it matters in this case just because of that additional information.
Thank you, counsel. You'll have 5 minutes rebuttal.
Thank you.
And counsel for respondent.
Thank you. Excuse me. Thank you. May it please the court. My name is Dylan Rampton Squiles, and I represent the state. Before I begin, really, I have I'd like to make a correction. In our brief, we miscited State v. Jackson, and so I'd like to correct the site to be State v. Jackson, 7764 Northwest 2nd, 612 Minnesota Appeals Court, 2009. Judge Smith also had a question on Exhibit 3 and how it relates to both Exhibits 2 and Exhibits 1. And really, Exhibit 3 provides the seal for Exhibit 2. So just making sure that is clear. So that's how the two...
Can you explain that to me when I'm just reading Exhibit 2 and Exhibit 3? Exhibit 2 seems to certify the attached order.
Yes. And
what does that mean?
So Exhibit 2... certifies that the Exhibit 1 was sealed. When we receive these documents, they come in a packet. The packet includes Exhibit 1, Exhibits 2, and then a certified driving record. That would be Exhibit 3. That is the last page of the packet, and they have the seal certifying that the documents are correct. So there's
The certification, at the end in Exhibit 3, when it refers to the above, it means not just the excerpt, but also Exhibit 2 and also Exhibit 1. Is that what that means? Okay.
Yeah. I believe I understand your question. Can you re-ask it just so I'm
sure. Well, the certification at the end of the record says executed on, I being a duly appointed, hereby certify that the above is a true and correct copy of the record as shown in the files. When it's certifying the record as shown in the files in that last little bit of certification, it says the above is a true and correct copy of the record. Is that referring to not only the portion of the driver's license that precedes it, or driver record, but also Exhibit 2 and Exhibit 1? I mean, is that what you're saying to me?
I'm not sure that it includes Exhibit 2. And I don't want to speak for the Department of Public Safety on Exhibit 1, but I believe that would be my understanding as well.
Okay. So turning to Exhibit 2 and Exhibit 1, why is this case not different from Knorr? Knorr talked about, that the certificate, that the statement in the certificate about mailing, all it did was repeat what was in the underlying admissible record. And so therefore there was not a confrontation clause problem. But this document just says date issued. Why does date issued equate to mailed by first class mail?
So I'll break that into two separate categories. I think when we look at NOR, NOR is helpful in that it lists actually the information in the certificate of order sent, and that information is almost exactly the same as Exhibit 2. The differences are, I believe, a date, but it's essentially the same document. NOR is also from 2018, and this gets to my second kind of argument. I don't know, but I would, you know, hard pressed to feel that the Department of Public Safety changed from date mailed by first class to date issued in the last 5 or 6 years. It might have.
NOR says that the underlying document said date mailed.
Right. It might have, but it is, NOR is recent enough where I don't know that that is, we don't know that that's the case. But again, date, as Judge Connolly pointed out, date issued does mean mailed, right?
Well, actually, I don't know if it does. And the reason is, I mean, well, you tell me why I'm wrong. Noor said, well, as long as it's not testimonial, then it's not a confrontation clause issue. And mailing, you know, we're not mailing things for testimony. We're just mailing things for the sake of mailing it. But if I saw date issued, I would say, well, that's when he was suspended. So that is for testimonial because that's what he's being tried of. So therefore, the confrontation clause is violated. So why, if I read it that way, why am I wrong?
So date issued to me is when they issue the letter. And while I agree that maybe if they didn't put it in the mail on the 21st, I doubt that they are going to wait around days or months to put it in the, you know, to put it in. Date issued is when they issue the letter.
Mail a lot faster than I do. I'm still waiting for things from the Department of Public Safety. So I'm not so sure I agree.
I mean, I think that the issue is not that when did they put, you know, the date issued is when they issue the letter, when they put it in and when that would be when they put it in the mail, not necessarily when, how it goes through the postal system. Right.
But my question is, you want to read, you know, you want to read issued the same as mail. And I'm saying, well, when I look at it, I say issued. You were suspended. Your notice was, you were suspended on this day. The notice of suspension was issued to you. And that's testimonial, isn't it? I mean, that's not just, you know, oh, it's, here's our records, you know, no harm, no foul. I mean, that is an element of the crime. Your license has been suspended. And so I think that is testimonial, isn't it, Mr. Scholes? Why am I wrong?
I guess to me, the date issued is when they, can we look at Exhibit 2 just for my
sure.
part?
Yes, of course.
So in Exhibit 2, the individual signed it on March 22nd, 2023 at the bottom of the page, right? They use the same language at the top of it as date issued March 22nd, 2023. And that's when, and they mailed it. Right. And so I think that we can see some commonalities that they mailed it when they issue it.
Well, counsel, I think I will help you out for a second here, and then I'll ask you maybe unhelpful questions to you. I mean, the notice of suspension of driving privileges, that's not the criminal case here is that the person drove after receiving this notice, right? And so the issuance of this notice is just a predicate that they received notice they weren't supposed to be driving. Then they went and headed, drove later, right? And that's the crime here, right? Driving after this suspension, right?
Correct. The crime is that they drove after the suspension.
So you're using your argument, I think, in your brief is that, and in NOR, is that the underlying document is just a record of sending the notice. It's not testimonial as to this crime because it precedes this crime. It's just a notice of suspension that is sent. The issue, though, is let's take out paragraph 2 of the certificate. Let's just take it out of there. Let's say, okay, we'll agree that that paragraph, which was created only to put into trial evidence on this crime, the date of the earlier mailing, if we take that out, what tells us that the underlying, and all we had was paragraph one that certifies that that's an authentic document, which is what I think a certification is meant to do. Well, that's a certification of order sent, created, maybe you disagree, but created, let's just assume, created for purposes of this case. What would tell us that that letter was mailed by first class mail on November 21? Anything beyond issued if we didn't have paragraph two? In other words, could you sustain? I think that the state only relies on first class mailing as being its evidence of notice. Tell me if I'm wrong there, if there's other trial evidence. But if that's all there is, can you survive without paragraph two?
I do not disagree that the only thing that in the record that gives us that it was sent by first class mail is paragraph two in exhibit two. But I, again, there is nothing that says it's first class, but I would again lean on date issued as when the document, when exhibit one was sent out.
So is the second paragraph of exhibit two, is it your argument that that document, let's just say that that was like not even included in a certificate of order sent, but you just had an affidavit from, you know, or you had someone come and testify. I understand that the notice of suspension was sent on November 21. Well, let's not put it that way. I'm trying to figure out like how this is not testimonial. Paragraph two. Why is that not testimonial? Since it's being, is that your argument that even if you just had an affidavit of paragraph two saying, you know, this order was sent by first class mail, you know, you had someone submit an affidavit, isn't that a testimonial document?
I think, and the way that the Knorr court looked at it, and I will concede that the date issued and date mailing language is unknown, right? The two documents together indicate that there's no new information. That and Knorr talks about how it's not testimonial because there's no new information provided in the certificate of order sent as opposed to the underlying letter. And so that I would rely on, you know, paragraph two isn't testimonial because there's no new information being presented. It was sent on November 21st of 2022. The issue date on the letter is November 21st, 2022. So there's no new information. And that is what Knorr looked at. I did find Brown and cases of Brown and Vandahar, which also back up that idea that no new information was presented. And so I just think that, you know, because of the no new information, it would be non-testimonial.
What is the point of exhibit two? Is that meant to satisfy the requirements of self-authentication under Rule 902? Or is it something else? Is it only the certificate at the end that you pointed us to at the end of paragraph or exhibit three that's meant to be the Rule 902 self-authentication?
Exhibit two provides, to me, it provides more context for exhibit one. It also comes in the packet, certifying the whole, you know, what exhibit one is. And that they mailed exhibit one to the individual listed, and just again provide.
I mean, I know context. What it says, but is it meant to be? As I look at Rule 902, and it talks about, you know, certified copies of public records. Is certificate of order sent I mean, I see paragraph one seem appearing to be that, you know, what I would think of typically as the attached is a true and correct copy. That seems right. Like it certifies the public records under 902.4. But I'm wondering if paragraph two is intended. Are you arguing that it's just another piece of public record, just like the first one, paragraph two is? And so therefore, as long as it's certified at the end of exhibit three, that it can come in without a live witness testifying to it?
Yes, Your Honor.
Okay, so paragraph two is doing something different. You're saying that itself is a non-testimonial public record.
Correct.
Or business record. Actually, clear that up for us. Does the state argue these are business records or public records?
I will concede that at trial, I did a terrible job of arguing what record it
was.
Well,
apparently you didn't because you won. That's why we're here.
apparently the judge bought my terrible arguments. I don't. It is a public record. It meets the statutory definition. Courts, both Knorr, Vandehart, and Brown, although Brown or Vandehart is citing Brown, do say that these are public records. There is no question that they are public records. Even if I did not do a great job in the record explaining that.
Okay. So if we thank you for that. If we were to separate out paragraphs one, and I'm going over a little bit, paragraph one and paragraph two, and let's say they're two separate documents. One says, you know, you have this person, Jody K. Peterson, who says, attached is a true and correct copy of the order. And then she creates another document that says the original of the attached order was mailed on these dates. And they all get certified. So we deal with the authenticity. I'm trying to deal with the underlying documents themselves, the hearsay and confrontation clause problems. Let's put paragraph two in its own document. You're arguing that would still come in as a public record. Is that right? A non-testimonial public record.
Yes. Although I think I would like to caveat that yes, to make sure that nothing else in the document changes, right? It's still in the packet. It's still a certificate of order sent. All the jazz that is in exhibit two, they're just two different documents that say that.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Then yes.
Okay. Great. Thank you, counsel. And counsel for appellant, you have 5 minutes.
Thank you. And I would like to just go back to the question that you asked, Judge Smith. You asked why paragraph two is not testimonial. And our position is that it is, in fact, testimonial. I think first and foremost, there is new information that's in that document. Again, like I said in my original argument, that first class mail is an important piece. And that is the only place that we've seen it. But I would also point this court to the record. If we look at the transcript from the jury trial on page 61, lines 5 through 10, we see how the state used this document. Exhibit two was not used solely to certify the underlying documents and get them in as a public record. Exhibit two was used to establish that this document was mailed, that it was mailed by first class mail, and that it was mailed on November 21st of 2022. They weren't using exhibit one to do that. They used exhibit two. I think that in and of itself demonstrates that this is in fact testimonial because they were using that to prove an essential element of the offense. Now, the other thing I would point to the court that they cited to in Vandehart as well as State v. Brown, which is a Minnesota Supreme Court case, the court said, we do not hold that in a proper case where a defendant offers evidence to substantiate his claim that he was unaware of the suspension of his license or the reasons thereof, or the notice of such suspension was not given to him, that a trial court could not order a state official to be called and to testify as to how the driver's records were prepared. I think that's a cautionary statement by this court and the Minnesota Supreme Court that this is something that we can challenge. And I think that we met that challenge. Mr. Butsey testified at trial. He said he never received this notice. Deputy Aho testified at trial. He said that he had no part of issuing the notice, drafting the notice, mailing the notice. He was completely hands off as it pertains to anything that has to do with the notice of order sent. So I do think this is a different case from those cases as well in that regard. Lastly, and this kind of gets towards the end of the last question from Judge Smith, I still don't believe that the state should be allowed to raise that this is a public record exception. As I stated, looking over the entire transcript, the only thing that was cited to by the state was that this was a business record exception. Right, wrong, or indifferent, that is what was raised before the district court. I believe this court, as well as other courts like the Minnesota Supreme Court and the Eighth Circuit, have not heard constitutional issues that were raised for the first time on appeal. I think this is far less, I guess, maybe important as a constitutional issue. This is just a rule of evidence that we're relying upon to keep information in or out. So kind of using that analogy, again, I think it's imperative that the court follow the very clear case law and not allow them to raise this public records exception for the first time on appeal. So unless there's any other questions, we would just ask that this court reverse the district court's decision.
What is testimonial about date issued?
Your Honor, if we're looking at date issued, I do think it's in Exhibit 1, I believe date issued is in fact testimonial in there because, again, it's going to an essential element of the offense. You know, if we look at cases like Melendez-Diaz, in that case, we were talking about a forensic analysis of a drug, namely cocaine. And one of the essential elements was that they needed to prove that the substance was cocaine. If we look at the statute that Mr. Butsey is cited with, the state needs to prove that he was given notice. And the only way that they're doing that is by using the testimonial statements that this document was in fact mailed.
But why, if we're just looking at Exhibit 1, I mean, I think you earlier agreed that under Knorr, if Exhibit 1 said mailed by first class mail on November 21, that's coming in without a confrontation clause problem, as long as it's certified or someone testifies to its authenticity. You lay foundation, Exhibit 1's coming in, is my point, even if it said mailed on X date.
And yes, Your Honor, I believe that would be the case if everything's proper and authenticated and if this is in fact a public record by the Department of Public Safety. Yes.
All right. Thank you. It looks like we don't have any further questions. Thank you both for your arguments and your briefing. The case is submitted and we'll have a decision out within the statutory time period.
Thank you.
Have a good day.
Thank you.
You as well.